All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type warrant officer of the United States Army, helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. Want to welcome you to our program today. We've got a lot of really great people that we're going to be talking to. We're going to be raising money for a number of different fundraisers. We're going to get in toys for kids and toys for tots and Race Across America and all kinds of different things, because this is the holiday season and it is a wonderful time of year, and we're anxious to get you onto our program. So before we continue, I do want to point out that over Christmas, since Veterans Radio is on Christmas Eve, we're hoping to put together a program of veteran-produced Christmas music. So if you know anybody out there who has produced or has recorded any songs about Christmas, maybe when they were in overseas or when they got home and so forth, please have them contact us here at Veterans Radio. Just go to our website, veteransradio.net, and click on Contact Us, and I promise you guys I'll get back to you if you have a song that you'd like to hear. I've got a list of some that people have sent me already, so I'm really excited about that. So that'll be on Christmas Eve, the 24th. Here on Veterans Radio here at WHAM 1600 in Ann Arbor. The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, as I did say that there are a lot of events going on around the local area as far as raising awareness and trying to provide gifts and things for children out there. And here at WHAM, they've partnered up with the Salvation Army, and you may find a few of their big giant boxes around Ann Arbor itself, where they're collecting toys. Their goal every year, this is ever since Ted Heisel was here on WAAM, and that's to try to gather up 1,600 gifts for children. But there are other options out there as well, and one of them is in the studio with me right now, and that, of course, is the Marines Toys for Tots. And joining me in the studio right now is Archelia Reeves, whose nickname is T, which is really good because so is mine, so we won't get confused in here. And Archelia is the local coordinator, Washtenaw County coordinator for Toys for Tots. And I want to welcome Archelia T. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale.
So tell me about Toys for Tots, and you can look right at the thing that they gave you.
Well, first of all, Dale, Toys for Tots program is a wonderful program. They've been in existence since 1775. The Marine Corps has defended freedom and democracy. And in also doing that, they came up in 1947 with a program called Toys for Tots. And they gathered gently used toys and wrapped them up for children, and they gave them out for Christmas. And the Marines looked at the program and said, wow, we have something good going here. And it has been going on ever since 1947.
Wow. And this is a nationwide program, and the Marines are heavily involved in, of course. And we want to make sure that people are aware of the Toys for Tots program. So you can go to their website. I did find that across the country, and that's just toysfortots.org.
Yes,
and
sir.
It'll help you out here. But tell me a little bit more about locally. You said this morning that you started counting toys.
Well, Metro Delivery has partnered up with the Toys for Tots program for Washtenaw County, and they have agreed to pick up toys all around the county, and they delivered a truck load of toys this morning, and I have been, and my elves, been counting toys all day long. I told them I have to leave, but they're still counting, and it's a blessing, and Washtenaw County has been a blessing to the program to make sure that every child has a Christmas.
I think it's just wonderful what you're doing here with, you know, not only in the county, but I'm assuming, I guess, that there are county coordinators all over the country that are doing the same thing that you're trying to do and counting up all those toys to distribute.
Yes, sir. All across the United States, this program is well known, and our mission is to make sure no child goes without a Christmas.
Well, it sounds like there's an awful lot of organizations that are doing that, and I'm really thankful that you were able to come on the program. You mentioned that there's an event coming up on this Wednesday. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Toyota Relation has teamed up with the local Dunning Toyota over on Jackson Road, and they are wanting Marines to come in and so they can present the toys to them, and then they're going to bring the toys to 301 West Michigan Avenue, Ypsilanti, Michigan, and that's where we're running our campaign.
Okay, so there's a kind of a fundraiser type of thing going on at Dunning Toyota on Wednesday, you said, at 4:30.
Yes, sir.
On Jackson Avenue.
Yes, sir.
And there's going to be media there. So all you Marines, and there are no former Marines, you guys are always Marines, I understand that. If you can fit into your dress uniforms, because they are so cool looking, you get over there to Dunning Toyota, and maybe you'll get yourself on television, but also you're going to feel good about collecting these presents and toys and so forth, and getting them over to T's warehouse over there in Ypsilanti so they can be distributed. When people are donating toys, is there anything about them? Do they have to be, I'm assuming these days they're not wrapped anymore.
No more wrapping. We want new toys. We go from 0 to 12 years old, and we have a problem keeping toys on stock for the 9 through 12 boys and girls. So
9 to 12 specifically is what we're looking for.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you look for clothes, or is it just toys?
Well, we prefer clothes because we prefer toys. We do get clothes, and we try to hand them out to families that have been burned out or living in their cars. I see all types of families with different situations going on. So nothing is thrown away. We just try to make sure it gets to the right people.
Okay. Is there a deadline for when people need to donate these toys so that you can get them out?
December the 22nd.
All right, folks. So December the 22nd is the last. They're going to collect all those boxes that you see all over the place, and I hope they're overflowing with toys, especially for those 9 to 12-year-olds. And, Dee, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. I hope to have you back next year. And we're going to work on getting these Marines in the local area to get a little bit more involved. And I know that there are some that are heavily involved, but we got to get a whole lot more of them out there for you.
Thank you, Dale, for inviting me.
Thank you very much for being on the program. Appreciate it very much. All right, so Toys for Tots, don't forget about it. You can go to their website. It's toysfortots.org, and you can click on there, and you don't have to be in Washtenaw County. Wherever you are across the country, they actually have a list of every drop-off spot, it looks like, and there's a Toys for Tots events, and you can find your local coordinator by going to their website, toysfortots.org. I strongly encourage you to do this. It's a great, great organization, and what a great theme. Who doesn't like to give out toys? I can't imagine it being anything that would be more fun than that. We've got another idea going on also in the Michigan area, and that is a stand-down. Now, I'm not sure exactly what a stand-down is, so I'm going to bring on my guest right now for that. And her name is Chef Steph. And I had to do a little research because I couldn't believe that there was somebody whose name was just Chef Steph. It turns out that she actually is a chef, and I want to welcome her to Veterans Radio. So, Chef Steph, welcome to Veterans Radio.
How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, and I actually, her real name is Stephanie Penn. Is that correct?
Yes, Yeah, that's my correct name. My culinary name is Chef Steph. I'm on Food Network. But my real birth name is Stephanie Penn. Yes, sir.
Okay. And you are a chef in the local Detroit area, correct?
Yes, I'm an executive chef. I own a mobile dinner theater, and I travel the country, and I cook in front of audiences live, performing arts entertainment.
I guess why not? You know, I looked at your website, and it's kind of cool. You know, of what the services that you provide, but you're providing an unusual service this coming weekend because you are a Marine, correct?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'm a Marine out of the Marine Corps, Leatherneck, Devil Dog, and one of several female Marines who are in the Southwest Michigan area. I go back and forth on 94. But up where I'm trying to do a female stand down for Southwest Michigan because they don't have any female stand down on this side of the state. So we're going to have one. It's going to be in Kalamazoo County, Kalamazoo, Michigan, and it's going to address the needs of women veterans who've worn the uniform from 90 days to over 30 years, and they get to see what's on the landscape of Kalamazoo County, like what's here in their domicile, so they can get services, and it won't be like a job fair. It's actually a stand-out of direct services, so they actually go to over 20 different booths, and they can, based on what their specific needs are, whether it's housing, employment, education, transportation, whatever they may need, once they go to that booth of that organization, whether it's a nonprofit, faith-based, for-profit organization, they actually get intake, assessed, and they get an appointment card to follow up with what they signed up for. So it's actually direct services for any veteran on the southwest side of the state.
Okay, so this is like the traditional stand-down that I've heard about in the past, but this is more directed toward women.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. And it is because women, of course, we all served. But women have different issues, particularly having, we're going to have like 9 women speakers who's going to talk about MSD, military sexual trauma, as well as combat vet PTSD. So women having kind of slightly different issues, not being men, they're going to be able to address those issues they may have experienced in active duty, and then trying to get the debriefing transitory services coming from active duty into the civilian landscape.
Okay, so let's remind our audience when this is and where it is.
This is Thursday, December 14th. It's going to be at Western Michigan University. It's Barnhart Center, the third floor, rooms 157 and 158 on campus. It's going to be from 11 to 4 all day. So they can come in and they can engage in 20 different categories of services. They cover not just Kalamazoo County, people coming from all over, Detroit, Ann Arbor, Saginaw, Grand Rapids, so trying to bring services that may be relevant to women veterans right there in one room so they can get what they need and get some quality of life going.
Well, is there a website or something that they can go to find out more information?
Yes, they can, sir. The website's on Facebook. It is called Leatherneck, Rotate, and Outside Transitory and Debriefing Services. So if they type in Leatherneck, it's the only site that pertains to women veterans. The site will start popping in immediately when you type in Leatherneck. But it's a Facebook page. We don't have a website yet. We're working on that after the stand-down is over so we can add those who came into our Rolodex so that they will have some existing services once the smoke clears from the stand-down. But they can go on Facebook and type in Leatherneck, and we'll pop up, and they can see all the things that's going on that Facebook page.
Okay, I see that. Leatherneck, Rotate, and Outside Veterans Debriefing and Transitory Services.
Whew. Yes, sir.
Okay. You can also get there from the veteransradio.net website. On today's posting for our program today, there's a link on there that'll take you to the Facebook page. So, again, that's this coming Thursday, the 14th of December at Western Michigan University from 11 to 4. It's mostly for female veterans. I'm sure that it wouldn't throw away a male veteran if you wandered in there. But this is for to help these women find the benefits that they're entitled to, because sometimes people don't pay a whole lot of attention, unfortunately, to the women veterans.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And the men can come because, of course, we're not discriminating because we all want the uniform. A lot of the men who are coming, they're coming to offer resources or services to the women veterans.
Right.
So they're coming to take a table or booth and engage and hug some sisters and break some bread. So it's open to anybody, but we're focusing as far as the services for any woman who served 90 days to over 30 years of active duty, whether they're officer, warrant officer, or enlisted personnel.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chef Steph, very much for being on Veterans Radio. And if you want to give us a report back on how it went, all right?
I will do that. Thank you for allowing me to come on your show and give more exposure and visibility. I truly appreciate that.
Okay, Chef. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. So those are some of the events that are coming up. There's lots more, of course. And if you check in your local area, I'm sure that you're going to find that there are people going up to the VA hospital to give out clothing and presents and stuff to the older people that are up in the VA hospitals. And of course, there are many other activities going on. One I did want to mention, I almost forgot before we take a real quick break, and that is a Wreaths Across America. Wreaths Across America is going to be next Saturday. And if I can find my note on that, I never do this. Why do I do that? It's going to be, you can go to their website, which is Wreaths Across America, of course, and find out where you can help out. Here it is. I found it. Wreaths Across America mission statement is to remember our fallen U.S. veterans, honor those who serve, and to teach our children the value of freedom. So they want you to join them on National Wreaths Across America Day, which is next Saturday, December 16th. Each December, the National Wreaths Across America Day, their mission is to carried out by coordinating wreath-laying ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery, as well as over 1,200 additional locations across all 50 states at sea and abroad. And again, if you go to their website, they are you can click on Donate, you can click on Volunteer, all kinds of things for there. And actually, their statement this year is, for 2017, I am an American. Yes, I am. So I encourage you to go to their website, and maybe you can help out by helping them distribute some of those wreaths across America on Saturday, December 16th. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we've got our guest today, who is the Medal of Honor recipient, Flo Groberg. And I can't wait to tell you this story. You're going to like this one. So make sure you stay tuned. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. For those of you who have been listening to Veterans Radio over the last almost 14 years, you might recognize that music as our theme music for our Medal of Honor segment that we usually do at the bottom of the hour. This time is going to be a little bit different because we haven't recorded this particular Medal of Honor segment because our guest today just received his a couple of years ago. Our guest today is Flo Groberg, and he received his Medal of Honor for what he did in Afghanistan. Let me just give you a brief background here just real quickly. What's really interesting about Flo, and the book is called 8 Seconds of Courage, and he'll explain what the 8 seconds is all about. But it's a really compelling story about, you know, going from being an immigrant to the Medal of Honor. He's a French immigrant and a U.S. captain. Tells his story about a remarkable act of bravery that earned him his Congressional Medal of Honor. He's the son of an American father and an Algerian mother. He lived in Europe until he was 12 years old, and he was influenced to join the military by a relative. And I don't want to give everything away, so I'm just going to bring him on the program. So joining me right now on the air is Flo Groberg. And Flo, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you for having me on. This is an incredible honor.
Well, thank you very much. I understand that you're running into a little traffic out there. Hopefully you're pulled over right now or in the back seat.
No, I'm good. It's Washington, D.C. That's the best thing you can actually count on is traffic, no matter what day of the week it is.
That's true, and pretty much no matter what town it's in anymore. So, Flo, tell me about how you got into the Army in the first place.
You know, like you mentioned earlier on, I came in as 12 years old. My father, I had never met my biological father, and I was lucky enough to be adopted by Larry, who is been the greatest thing in the world for me. He's an American from Gary, Indiana. He got to meet my mother when I was about 3 years old, and, you know, he fell in love, and he took me in as a son. Mm-hmm. And so when I was about 12 years old, he decided that, hey, you know, let's move back to the United States. And he talked to my mom about it, and my mom was like, well, you got to ask Flo about this, you know, moving back to the U.S. because, you know, he's a French kid. And he tricked me. He tricked me by asking me about whether or not I love McDonald's and if I wanted to meet Michael Jordan. And obviously, those were two answers that were yeses. And next thing you know, I end up in Palatine, Illinois, of all places, which is very different than Paris, France.
I would say.
yeah. And so that was the start of my journey into the United States.
All right. So you grew up in Indiana, well, after 12, correct?
So I grew up in France, and then my dad's right. from Indiana. And then I actually grew up in, when we moved to the United States, I was in Palatine, Illinois.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right. Tell me about your uncle. That was kind of the interesting story. Your uncle Abdu?
Yes. So, it's one of the things when I talk about my uncle, I try to describe it as this individual that where we grew up as kids, we're all infatuated with one individual. Some of us is my mom, our dad, a brother, a sister, an uncle, a cousin, and to me, it was my Uncle Abdu. I loved him more than anything else in the world. I wanted to be just like him. I remember I was just so stuck to him. I used to want to hang out everywhere he went. Even when he went to the bathroom, I was like, I want to be next to you. And he's like, no, you can't go into the bathroom with me. All right, kiddo. And so I was, in hindsight, I was like that really annoying sibling. But he meant everything to me. And one of those things about him is that, you know, he's Algerian. So okay. He was born in Algeria, which is in North Africa. And he was really, really deeply involved in the Muslim faith. And he became an imam at a young age. And so when a terrorist organization called the GIA decided to come into Algeria in the late 1980s, early 1990s, to take over the country and preach own version of Islam, which we're now today we're very accustomed to, which is what you're seeing with Al-Qaeda, what you're seeing with ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
He decided to step up and fight against it. So he didn't take the. I used to say he put the book down and put on a military uniform, but he never actually did that. What he did is that he kept the book with him, but he put on a military uniform and he decided to go fight against these people. And in February of 1996, he was while serving in the Algerian Army, Special Forces, he was shot, beheaded, and dismembered, and put in a box and sent back to my grandfather.
Oh, my. Oh, wow. I didn't realize that is what had occurred. That must have been very traumatic for you.
Yeah, it was. I was 13 years old, and, you know, it was my dad. My dad told me about what had happened, and my mom had left, and I didn't even have an opportunity to talk to my mom about it because she had left early on after she had heard about what had happened to her brother to go back to Algeria to bury him because they got a 24-hour burial and it was tough. It was one of the toughest moments of my life because I didn't know how to react.
Right.
That was probably the biggest piece about it. And I wanted to be part of the solution, but I didn't know how to react. I didn't know how to understand that my favorite person in the world was dead.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So after that, you I'm assuming that you finished. Where did you go to college?
So I went to college in 2001, mm-hmm. and I remember thinking that I was so young when my uncle was killed. So you fast forward a few years and time usually allows you to either cope with things or make different decisions. But I know I knew in the back of my head at that point, it's like, hey, no matter what I do, I'm going to go to the military. So, but I was a pretty decent runner.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the opportunity to go run in college. And nothing was happening around the world in terms of fighting those individuals. So I didn't know where to make my mark. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to go out there, go to college, get an education, and run track. And then after that, I'm going to join the military.
Okay. And so that's what you did. Did you look around at the different services? We've got a minute to go before we're going to take a break, Flo. We're talking with Flo Groberg, who's author of a book entitled 8 Seconds of Courage. He went from immigrant to a Medal of Honor recipient. And after we come back after the news, we're going to find out a little bit more about how that occurred. But what made you decide to join the Army?
So to answer actually your previous question, I actually ended up going to University of Maryland. And
oh, Maryland, okay.
Maryland, yeah, Maryland. And one of those things was when I went to University of Maryland, I joined ROTC for a little bit. But with running track, it actually made it very hard for me. So I decided, okay, I'm going to focus on track. And once I graduate, I'm going to go out there and enlist in the United States Army and go to officer candidate school and so on.
Okay, I got to hold you off. We got to take a real quick break here. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away. You're listening to Veterans Radio right now. And we're back on Veterans Radio with our own Medal of Honor recipient as our guest today. His name is Flo Groberg. He received his Medal of Honor in 2015 for actions in Afghanistan in 2012. And we're going to get there eventually to our audience. So, Flo, you mentioned that you were at the University of Maryland. You graduated from the University of Maryland. And at that point, this was after 9/11, you decided to join up. So tell us a little bit about how you got into the Army.
No, so I graduated in 2001 out of high school, and you know, I was just naturalized as a U.S. citizen in February 2001 during my senior year of high school, and then my freshman year, 9/11 happened, and that was one of those moments that really you know changed my life, and mm-hmm. the same way it changed millions of other lives in this country. I will never forget having a conversation with my father. That evening after the phone lines were open again, and telling him that I wanted to drop out of school and join the Army and become an Army Ranger and going out there and fighting any individual that was involved with this. And my dad gave me, like he had done my entire life, a life lesson. And he said, okay, son, you are reacting with emotions, but when I gave you my name, when I adopted you and I gave you the name Groberg, I asked of you one responsibility, which was when you start something, you finish it. At that point, you know, it took me a little while to accept that, but I realized what he meant, and I meant that, you know, I need to go out there and get my degree. And after that, we're joining the U.S. Army. So after I finished school, I went in and enlisted in the U.S. Army. It took a little bit of a time because I was a French citizen as well, and I renounced my French citizenship, which took about 18 months. But once I was done, I was enlisting in the U.S. Army and to go out there and be a difference maker in this world where we see evil every single day. And, you know, we live in the greatest country in the world, but the reality is we only live in this country that we consider the best in the world because we have the best people in the world.
Right. I agree with you. I agree with you entirely on that. But the Army turned out not to be a little bit more difficult than you anticipated because you went off to Ranger School.
I love you say that. So look, I never expected the Army to be easy, but my goodness, was the Army Ranger School one of the difficult tasks? It kicked my butt over and over again. Every time I thought I had a little advantage on the Ranger School, it came back to me and told me, you don't got it, boy. And so I went through it, but you know what? It's about never giving up. And thankfully, as you read in 8 Seconds of Courage, I had some really good friends and some really good mentors during my time that allowed me to like keep fighting and never give up. And I went through it. I was lucky enough that I went straight through 62 days of Ranger School. And so that's something I can be really definitely proud of. But it also got me ready for Afghanistan.
Well, that is true. I can, you know, we've had the opportunity to talk to many people who have been Rangers or Special Forces and so forth, or pilots and so forth. You know, it's just, you just have to keep going and keep going and keep going. And you do, you run into some great friends who are, you know, who motivate you. And of course, as you mentioned, the mentors, you know, you don't, some of them you don't like at the time, but you look back on it and you realize how important they were in your life and getting you through whatever that program was that you went in through.
No, you're absolutely right. One example is Gallardo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Silver Star recipient. I went, was out there in the Corn Gall when Todd Junta received his Medal of Honor and, you know, based on actions that happened in 2007. And Gallardo was that guy. He was literally that guy. Like, everybody knew who he was because he understood, and all the Ranger instructors understood who he was, what he had gone through. He got shot in the head.
Oh.
During that battle, and he got back up and continued on with a mission. I mean, you're talking about a standard of being the outstanding military service member. That's Gallardo for you. And he was in my Ranger class, and everybody knew who Gallardo was, and he was a pain in the butt for me. But when I was struggling, I saw this different side of Gallardo, and he challenged me. He was there with me. He's like, hey, man, if you're going to quit tomorrow, I'm going to quit with you. I was like, you can't quit, man. You're Gallardo. Like, you're the hero guy.
Yeah.
He's like, no, and I don't care what anybody says, you know, says or thinks about me. I'm here with you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to guide you. And he changed my entire perspective. And there's a reason why I went through that school, and the reason why I became somewhat of I was a sufficient and decent officers, because I had the opportunity to serve next to such an incredible individual.
Mm-hmm. Was he going? I'm trying to remember. Was he going through as a sergeant, or was he also in OCS?
No, he was actually going through as a sergeant. So mm-hmm. He was in 173rd at the time, and he was enlisted. And for him to actually be a first sergeant in 173rd. Actually, starting first class in 173rd, he needed to get his tab. And so, what the funny thing about Gallardo is that he'd been in the regiment for a while, and when he was in the 173rd, you know, he served as an NCO, and he just never got the opportunity to go to Ranger School because he kept getting deployed.
Well, I was going to say, so he was not the youngest guy in your class, I'm sure.
Oh no, he was not. So he finally got a break. So when we all think about a break, we think mm-hmm. about vacation. No, he opted to go to Ranger School, and I gave him a lot of props.
Yeah, I've met some people like that. All right, so we go to Ranger School. You made it through, and you're all excited. And the next thing you know, they send you off to Afghanistan. Right?
And here I am. So I'm in Afghanistan, and I'm a second lieutenant with no experience, and Colonel Pearl at the time was the battalion commander. You know, he brings me into his office. He talks to me about the responsibilities that I have for Dagger 4 Platoon. He tells me I'm going to take over Dagger 4 Platoon out of Combat Apples Huntington Miracle. And he tells me about the unit and the folks, what they've been doing for the last couple of months, and what responsibilities. And I remember just listening. In the back of my head, I'm thinking that, oh my God, this is real. Oh my God, this is mm-hmm. real. And I walked out of his office. I kept thinking about it. Man, I have no experience. I've never been shot at, from my understanding, and where I've seen it. And here I am about to take over this unit with these incredible individuals who have been in one of the most kinetic places in Afghanistan or in the world. But I had a responsibility to take care of them. So when I got there, the first person I sought out was platoon sergeant. And his name is Corey Steele. He's sergeant first class Corey Steele. Mm-hmm. I told him, I go, hey, I have no experience, but I'm going to need you to guide me, mentor me, and teach me how to be the most effective leader. And we had a good conversation. He told me to shut up for the next 7 days to watch and listen to what was happening around me. And after 7 days, he would, him and I would get back together and come up with the next plan. And tell you what, I was lucky enough to come into a unit with a man like Corey Staley, who really took the time and effort to teach me how to be an effective leader.
Well, I'll tell you, just from my experience, although I was not a real live officer, the enlisted people were the ones that got me through, especially the experienced one, because they knew what they'd been there. And, you know, as you mentioned, going in as a young second lieutenant and taking over a platoon, it's got to be frightening. But, you know, you have to show your courage and show them that, you know what you're doing. And it's a good thing that you had a sergeant that could show you that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, but I wasn't scared about the job. I was actually nervous about, as an officer, making decisions that would get people killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was my biggest fear. And I knew, my dad had always taught me about, trust my training and not be weak. And I'm not trusted up. You know, the word weak is really negative. I think the word weak in combat really refers to the idea of not making the decision.
Right.
Being too scared to make a decision. You know, combat, it's all about that one split second where you go right or left.
Correct.
And that's it. That is it. I mean, and you have to live with it. And if you go left, and it was supposed to be right. If you go right, and it was supposed to be left, you have to live with the consequences of that decision. I was nervous about that.
Well, I understand that because you were in the Peck River Valley in Afghanistan, which happens to be the most dangerous place in the world. That's in quotes. And you had to come in, to face your own greenness. And I think, the way I interpreted that was, how am I going to react if somebody starts shooting at me? And as you said, you had to make the decisions of, do they go right? Do they go left? And evidently, I think you probably did a pretty good job, it sounds like.
I'll tell you what, I had the best of the best around me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason why I did an okay job. My job was the simplest job in the world, which is make decisions and allow your NCOs and your soldiers to go out there and operate and execute.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I had the best of the best around me. That they were going to go out there and do the best job.
Mm-hmm. I like to think that we were all surrounded by the best of the best. And, most of the time that was true, I think. How long did you spend in Afghanistan your first time?
9 months, for sure.
Okay. And then you came back, and where did you go from there?
From there, we were back in garrison, and I did a job as an executive officer. Alpha Company. I moved from Dagger Company and went to Alpha Company 212 Infantry out of 4th Brigade, Fort Carson.
Oh, okay.
And then I was selected to run a specialized security detail for, at the time, Colonel Mingus, who was the Brigade Commander for 4th ID.
Okay. All right. So you went back to Afghanistan in 2012, correct?
I did, yes.
Okay. We're talking with Flo Groberg, who's a Medal of Honor recipient, who's just released his story of 8 seconds of courage, a soldier story, going from immigrant to Medal of Honor. And you wrote this along with Tom, I gotta make sure I give him the credit too, Tom Salio. I really encourage people to get this book. It's not that long, but everything is packed into it that you could ever want in a true story of courage. For a young man especially. So you go back and as part of this security force, correct?
Yeah. I ran a security detail for, at the time, Colonel Mingus, who ran 4th ID, 4th Brigade operation. So he was actually in charge of all of Eastern Afghanistan.
At that time. All right. So you were in charge of protecting all of the, the colonels and so forth that were going in and around the area. Or were you attached to one man?
Yeah, one man, and actually a Sergeant Major as well who worked for them, which was Command Sergeant Major Griffin. And so I had a team of six, including myself, where I had my first class rank. I had Sergeant Mahoney, Specialist Bartirama. I had a specialist C-Corps and a specialist O-Chart with me as well.
So what were your duties with him? Was it to kind of take him around to meet with the Afghan tribal leaders and so forth?
So So he had, well, his mission was he owned the entire operation for Eastern Afghanistan. So between meeting with his own unit, which was, you know, 65% of our mission, to meeting with all the Afghan partners that we had, as well as the government officials, my job was to plan and make sure that his security was set in place, coordinate with the receiving units everywhere we went, which was outside of Jalalabad or Kop Fenty, or Fos Fenty in Afghanistan. So I would call in and tell the units, hey, Colonel Mingus is coming at this time, at this hour, and this location to do this. Please have this type of security out there. So I coordinate all the security elements for 45 different outstations across Eastern Afghanistan.
Wow. So you arranged all the logistics, the helicopters or whatever transportation that he needed.
Yeah, that was my job. I mean, actually, it was a pretty simple job. Not a lot of years. I loved it. I remember thinking about it. I was like, man, I got the best job in the world. Because everybody wants to make sure that the boss has the best receiving reception when he comes out there. And so when I called, I was like, hey, the boss is coming tomorrow. Make sure you got this. And I'm like, oh, okay, we got this. We got this. But obviously, as we get forward, and August 7 was not the same reception when I was on the phone, and obviously it was a completely different story.
Let's look, let's go into that. You ready?
Yeah. So okay. August 7th, I called, you know, the boss was having a commander's meeting, and so most of the senior leaders that were part of our unit were at Jalalabad and at, Kop Fenty. And so, but I called Kop Fires, because, Combat Apples Fires, that night, and I'll never forget this, because I called and I was talking to some major in one of those special units based out of the 101st, and I was talking to some major. I told him, I was like, hey, tomorrow I'm coming to your combat outpost with Colonel Mingus, Colonel Walrath, and an Afghan general, and two more battalion commanders, and two commandant majors, and we're going to go to the Kunar Provincial Security Meeting. Now, I'm going to need you to provide us with 15 people as an escort as we walk out outside your base.
Mm-hmm.
The guy kind of looked, you know, listened to me and told me on the phone, and said, hey, we're going to walk the Ralph Breyer. So I can't give you that. But we're going to secure it. And so I'll never forget this, because I put him on mute, and I had the adjutant, Lieutenant Cassidy, next to me at the time. And I was like, and I told Lieutenant Cassidy, I'm like, hey, man, watch, I'm going to repeat my request. This guy's going to tell me to F off. Mm-hmm. And I did just that. And guess what? He pretty much told me to F off. And he hung up on me. And so the night before, I thought, I was thinking about it. And I was, you know, as I went to bed, I was like, oh, you know what? He must have been having a bad day. He's going to realize that his boss's boss is going to show up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes sense for him to be there to receive him. But on August 8th, when we landed in Kop Fires, he wasn't there.
Oh.
He had left 15 minutes prior. What he did that kicks my butt to this day is the fact that he actually cleared their area, but he left.
Right. And this area was turned out not to be cleared.
No, not at all. Because we were talking about two suicide bombers.
Can you just describe for our audience, if you can, what happened on the 8th of August?
As we landed, Kop Fires, Combat Apples Fires, you know, he wasn't there, so I had to adjust my team, and I put my team charge on First Class Brian Brink up front to control the pace of our walk, and I put C-Corps behind him, who was always in charge of making sure you secure Sergeant Major Griffin. And we had diamond formation. And I was always at the rear of the diamond formation. But in this case, I wanted to be at the spear of it because, for eyes on. And so I put O-Chart, private first class O-Chart. And I put him in my position. I told him, hey, anything that happens tonight or today, this morning, I need you to pick the boss, which was Colonel Mingus at the time, and take him to safety.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, roger that, sir. And so we decided to walk out, and it was 1,100 meter movement, 700 meters into the movement. As we're about to cross this bridge, we saw two motorcycles coming, you know, full speed towards us. One of those things that Brink and I did that day that really probably made the biggest impact was the fact that we decided to take Afghan National Army and put them up front.
Mm-hmm.
We realized that we didn't have enough security. We did not have enough manpower. And so we took the Afghan National Army guys that were sitting around the base and we put them up front. And one of them did an incredible job. When the motorcycles were coming towards us, he raised his rifle and started screaming dart. We forced the first motorcycle to drop its bike, and then forced the second one to drop his bike. And then they started running away, which at that point I realized we're in deep trouble.
Right.
I witnessed that. And there was a guy, maybe 20, 22 years old, that came out of a structure to our left, walking backwards and 180-degree turn and then 90-degree turn towards us. And, you know, I commend myself towards him. And I hit him, grabbed him, realized he had a suicide vest. And I tried to everything that I had in me to throw him away as quickly as possible and as far as possible. And he detonated.
Yeah, he blew up. He detonated.
Yeah.
Oof.
And
somehow you survived this. You were badly wounded, but a number of your comrades did not survive. Some of your good friends.
Yeah, I somehow lived, and you know, it's just crazy part of the whole situation. Human Salvage Griffin, Major Gray, Major Kennedy, and State Department USAID Reagan, I thought they were all killed. You know, I had a dude that made a vest at my feet, and that threw me 20 feet away, but they didn't kill me. I had four of my buddies who were nowhere near the blast site get killed. And I also forced a second suicide bomber that was still in the building trying to come out to detonate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're lucky enough that we all didn't die because the second one inside
the building. Wow. It sounds like the whole thing was obviously well planned, with so many distractions, you know, to divert your attention from the actual real bad guys.
Yeah, well, that year they had the Taliban had the idea was called the secular attack. So they were waiting for it. And you know what? They saw an opportunity. They went for it. So, yes. Was it planned? 100%. Did it go as well as it wanted it to? No, it didn't. The majority of us survived. But they killed four incredible Americans. I'm pretty sure what happened after that, a couple weeks later, I'm not going to get detail due to classification. But U.S. Army did a pretty good job to go find those people.
Yeah, they went and found them.
Yes, that.
So you ended up severely injured, and ended up in Germany, and then you ended up at Walter Reed. Is that correct?
That's correct. First I was launched to Germany, where I woke up looking at John Davis from the band Korn.
Oh.
And after that, it was like surreal. I was like, oh my God, like, am I dreaming about you? Like, why the heck would I be dreaming about you? And he was there. He was there with a USO tour, by the way. Kudos to USO. Kudos to USO for keep sending some, you know, stars and athletes and movie folks as well as musicians to come out there and support us, because that makes a difference.
It does. It truly does. I mean, 50 years ago, we couldn't wait for the USO to show up. they're very important. So they moved you to Walter Reed, and you had, you spent 3 years there, didn't you?
Yeah, so 3 years, but really it was about 2 years worth of injuries, and I'm named Salvage. So I decided to get my leg cut off, and I fought for my leg for quite a while. But, you know, I was lucky to be surrounded by incredible doctors and incredible nurses.
And you have to read the book. I'd love to get into all the details of these things. We got about 4 minutes left, Flo. The book is 8 Seconds of Courage. It's a soldier story from immigrant to Medal of Honor recipient. Tell me what it was like when you got the call that they were going to award you this Medal of Honor.
Good best story of the day. Hands down, I was working for the agency, one agency with three letters, and I was in a spot where I had no cell phone service. And here I go, walking out, I just had lunch, and I get a call on my cell phone. I'm like, oh my goodness, what the heck is this? The answer is like, hey, this is Colonel Sweeney from the Pentagon. I just want to let you know that you're going to be receiving a call from one senior official at the Pentagon on 21 September. He told me the year, 2015. Is this a good number for the call? I'm like, sure. Yes, sir. And he hung up the phone. And so I told my fiance at the time, I was like, hey, I'm about to get a call from someone. I have no idea what it is, but apparently they're calling me about, like, from Pentagon. So I understood that I've been put in for the Distinguished Service Cross.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought it would come from the president or any senior high ranking official. So I was like, man, I might have been in trouble. What did I do? So seriously, I was like, I'm in trouble. And then I got a call. And she's next to me because we took the day off, half day off, and there was President Obama telling me that I was going to receive the medal. And that was one of those conversations that will never forget the rest of my life. First of all, I respect the heck out of this man, you know, as a leader. But the way he talked to me and the way he represented the guys that were killed, I can never, ever in my life thank him enough.
It's a very emotional chapter to read, Flo. And I encourage people to go out and get this book, 8 Seconds of Courage, A Soldier's Story. We've got about a minute to go, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to promote what you're doing at Boeing Aircraft. What is it that you're doing with Boeing?
You know, I'm the luckiest person in the world. I was given the opportunity to work for the one of the greatest companies in the world, and hands down, without a doubt, for our military service members. And I run all veterans programs at Boeing Company, and we're out there trying to fight to make sure that every one of the service members, veterans, and spouses get the opportunity to go out there in front of the next passion of their lives and make a difference, to continue to serve the community while having the right career track that they deserve. And we're also trying to fight for those folks who are struggling with PTSD and suicidal ideation, just like I did.
Right.
And, you know, we want to let them know that, you know what, follow us, hit me up, talk to me, look what I'm doing, and follow what Boeing is doing, because we're out there partnering up with the best organizations in the country to make sure that we give you an opportunity to succeed. If you're struggling, I've been there. I've struggled. I need that support system. And guess what? It took a lot of effort, but we're going to make it.
Well, I want to get in touch with you to find out more about that, Flo. That's our music coming up to the end of the hour. I want to thank you very much for being on our program, and congratulations on your Medal of Honor. And it's been a privilege to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. That was Flo Groberg. His book is 8 Seconds of Courage. And until next week, you are dismissed.